Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 18th of June 2017. My name is DLP Watson, and this time I'm joined by Beatrix Swanson-Scott and Gareth James. We're now going to talk about The Ugly One at the Park Theatre in their smaller space. This is a play written in 2007 by Marius von Meyenberg. This production is using the same translation written by Meyer's aide that they used in the original English production at the Royal Court in 2007. It is directed here by Roy Alexander Weiser, and it concerns a man called Lett who works in some kind of electrical engineering company as a designer and inventor. He thinks he was pretty average looking until he doesn't get allowed to present his latest invention, his latest creation to people, because he suddenly finds out that all his colleagues and everybody he knows think he's hideously ugly. In fact, that it's not just a subjective opinion, he is objectively hideously ugly. He's never known this, and even talking to his wife about it, she says, "But you're a lovely person," and things like that. And he is very upset by this and sees a doctor who says, "Well, I might be able to do something about how hideously ugly you are, but it will cost a lot of money. And it might be almost impossible because you are so hideously ugly that, you know, there might not be anything I can work with." The surgery works and he becomes utterly beautiful and the most beautiful person anybody has ever seen. And he attracts a 75-year-old millionaireess who's had her face so often lifted that she still looks young. She has a gay son. And so popular is his face, and it initially brings him a lot of fame, but also the doctor who provided the plastic surgery, did the reconstructive surgery on Lett, also becomes very famous and starts reconstructing other people's faces. Unfortunately, the doctor only knows how to do one face, so people start cropping up who look exactly like Lett, including people that Lett knows, like his business colleague and rival, or the gay son of this old woman he gets involved with, and the pianist at the hotel, and things like that. So he becomes increasingly disturbed, and he has completely lost his old, ugly identity that he didn't seem to mind until he found out how ugly he was, and he has become just another one of these beautiful people who the doctor, plastic surgeon, keeps manufacturing. And we look at the way that it affects his relationships at work, his work, and also how it affects his marriage. It is a fascinating play, I think, and really rather complex, and it is done here as it was done originally, without people changing their costumes. You have four actors on the stage. The cast is Charlie Dorfman as Lett, Indra Ove as Fanny, his wife, Erin Nick as Carmen, his colleague and business rival, and Tania Miller as Scheffler, his boss, and also plays the plastic surgeon. Because you only have these four actors playing different parts, only Lett stays the same, but you have people alternating always in the same way, so the boss and the plastic surgeon are the same person, the colleague and the gay son the same person, and the wife and the 75-year-old rich woman are always played by the same people. But that structure means that people switch between roles very quickly. It's done here in a way that isn't at all confusing. You always know which particular person's done it. But they don't put on a hat or anything like that. There are slight changes in accent in some cases. But for the most part, they're always pretty much wearing the same clothes. They're always pretty much appearing as the same actors as they always are. So while it has a potential for confusion, it doesn't really confuse you in the end. And it works extremely well, I think, especially in this production. This production, compared to the last one, I mean, this one is a little bit more busy. There's a bit more fruit thrown around and cut up. The actors walk around and are based around a large platform which has projections played upon it at some points, especially when they're sort of showing computer screens or animations. But they also stand upon that, you know, it acts as a bed. So there's in many ways, it's a very spare production. And it's not, you know, there's no over elaborate costumes or props. But it still, I think, works extremely well. And it reminded me how much I enjoyed the first production. But I think I seem to recall the other one being a little bit more static. This one is a lot more energetic. The actors are moving around the set and moving around the stage an awful lot. So it did feel a rather more energetic than the previous one. But it's still a fascinating play if you're looking into those talks about identity. And it really, I think, is extremely well done. What do you think about it, Beatrice?
So I had not seen the play before this production, and I was quite intrigued by the premise, and I didn't really know what to expect. I just read an interview with the director who said that he expected people to be entertained and surprised, and I think that's quite accurate. I really enjoyed this play, but I was quite surprised by a lot of the things that happened in it. For example, the use of fruit. I'm not sure if that's in the script, but one of the most memorable things about this production is the operation scene in which... Yeah, so the sound effects of this operation are created by the cutting and squeezing of fruit, which is quite bizarre and disturbing, but very interesting to watch. I thought the cast was great. The ensemble was excellent. They had an enormous amount of energy and concentration, and there's quite a lot of direction going on. So the scene changes are quite orchestrated and very interesting, but they really had to maintain this high level of energy, and they did that very well. The way it's staged, I really like the smaller space at the park because you're very sort of involved always in the action, and the way they've done it here with the stage in the middle. They don't actually really stand on the stage that much. They really use the floor around the stage, their playing space, which is really nice because they're really right in front of you and you're pretty much on eye level with the actors. It was very funny and very entertaining, but the themes that are sort of at the heart of this play, they're obviously touched upon, but they're not really explored that deeply because it becomes increasingly farcical, I found, which wasn't a bad thing. It wasn't what I was expecting, and I did enjoy it, but it's something that you think about after the play, not really during the play, because you're just laughing too much.
We're now going to talk about Tommy, which is just closed at the Theatre of Stratford East. This is a musical based on The Who's 1969 concept album and is probably remembered, well, certainly by me, as the intensely Ken Russell-ish film by, of course, Ken Russell. Very, very typical of his filmmaking style and is, I think, a rather brash and brilliant film and has so many fascinating people in it. I mean, you know, Oliver Reed and Margaret, I think, and there's Elton John, so it's all great fun, but I think it's not quite the way it's done in the concept album. But the songs are very familiar from that film. This production has been touring around the country for quite a while, since February, and has a cast of about 20 people, performers and musicians. So it is about a deaf and dumb kid who learns to play pinball and becomes really great, and things go horribly wrong, but then I think things go horribly wrong from the start. What did you think about this production, Gareth?
Well, I absolutely loved it. I do go back a long way with this music stroke this show because the original concept album, which I think was the first ever so-called rock opera, is part of the sort of soundtrack of my life, really. And I loved it when it was released in 1969 and played it to death. I liked rather than loved Ken Russell's film. As you say, it was kind of a star-studded film, and it had a lot to like about it, but it didn't have the emotional energy that I think is necessary for Tommy. And then we had this Des McAnuff, Pete Townsend staging from Broadway into the West End, which came, I think, in the mid-1996, I think it got to the West End. And I was, you know, I was in love with it all over again. I thought it was a brilliant staging. And I saw it a couple of times when it was at the Shaftesbury Theatre. It isn't mounted very often. The only other production I'm aware of was another touring production, which turned up in Greenwich, which was a Michael Strassen production a few years back, which I wasn't mad keen on. It had its good points, but I wasn't in love with it in the same way as I was with the West End show. So it was lovely to go to Stratford, which is, you know, one of my favourite theatres, and fall in love with it all over again, really. And I think the great success of this production is the integrated casting, because what they've done is they have a deaf Tommy, and his mother Nora is also a deaf actor. And then you have actors and musicians with other disabilities, including blindness and physical disabilities. And it's somehow, you know, it's the story of a boy traumatized by his father's death who becomes deaf, dumb and blind. But it resonates so much more in this production because, in my view, because of that integrated casting. Also, I think because of the youthfulness of the casting, the sort of non-starry youthfulness of it, masses of enthusiasm, masses of energy that just kind of ooze off the stage, really. So it's a very talented integrated company. There's a four-piece band. Three of them also have a role in the play, who I thought sounded just terrific. I think Robert Hyman is the musical director there, and one of the musicians. All the vocals I thought were really superb. The way they do it is they have two actors assisting Tommy singing the songs, and then also an actress who is assisting his mum singing the songs. I thought Max Runham, who plays Captain Walker, plays Tommy's dad, had particularly strong vocals. I thought he was particularly strong in the vocals. And then you've got other instrumentation that comes in a kind of actor-musician way, where you've got sort of wind, brass, guitar, percussion, all kind of provided by another 11 members of the cast. So it's a really full stage. It's a very well-designed show, I thought. It's sort of fairly simple, but very well-designed. The show has got really quite nice, quirky period choreography by Mark Smith. Neil Irish is the guy who does the design. Kerry Michael, who is the outgoing artistic director of the Theatre One in Stratford, has done a great job of staging it. And it was an audience of a certain age, I have to confess, on Tuesday. But they just loved it. And there was this spontaneous standing ovation at the end of it, because there was just so much energy and enthusiasm coming from the stage. And we were hearing this stuff that we've known for donkey's years, but we were hearing it very fresh, and that's what I think I liked most about it, really. Pete Townsend has actually written an extra song for the Acid Queen, and the Acid Queen is played by Peter Straker, who was in the original Tommy. Anyway, Peter Straker does an amazing job, and I thought that was an inspired piece of casting. There's a wheelchair actor called Guy Robinson, who's got incredible presence as Uncle Ernie. I thought he was terrific. And then the stepdad, Frank, is played by an actor called Alim Jada. And then William Grint, who this performance of Tommy, you know, is just very moving. And it does make a huge difference to the essence of the show, really. This is a co-production with lots and lots of people. I think the main company is called Ramps on the Moon. Grey, which is the disability theatre company, is involved. And then almost every quality regional theatre you can imagine has kind of got together, you know, the Sheffield Crucible, the Birmingham Rep, the Wolsey in Ipswich, and with the Theatre Royal in Stratford East. And I just think it's a brilliant collaboration, because together they're able, you know, to mount this and to take it to lots of different places to be seen by lots of different people. So, you know, as much as I'm recommending it, it's clearly over, but one will only hope that they can give it another life and bring it back, because 10 days was just too short. And I'd certainly be happy to go back and see it again. It's a terrific example of how you can produce something so exciting with such collaborations, really. So gold stars all round, I'd say.
We're now going to talk about Twelfth Night at the Shakespeare's Globe. This production is directed by Emma Rice, and might be her last full play done at the Globe, certainly at the Globe itself. It's designed by Les Brotherson. Obviously, because of Emma Rice and her history there, it's a lot of speculation and interest about this play, and I think it has coloured one or two of the reviews. There's some really rather vicious review, which I don't think it quite deserves. The cast includes Mark Antolin as Andrew Agucci, Carly Borden as Maria, Nandi Bibe as Fabian, Lugetto Chocolat as Feste, Tony Jai Wardner as Sir Toby Belch, Joshua Lacey as Orsino, Peter Lawman as Antonio, Annette McLaughlin as Olivia, Katie Owen as Malvolio, John Plumo Jaina as Sebastian, and Anita Joy Uwaje as Viola. The major criticism of this production, I think, in the more highbrow press, has been that it uses fun rather than the more melancholy elements of it. In fact, you get an awful lot of some things which are rather melancholy are completely excised and replaced by, well, a lot of fun. Obviously, with a name like Lugetto Chocolat, we are dealing with a cabaret performer as Feste, and most of his lines, his sort of more normal lines, are handed over to the character playing Fabian. And he really comes in to do a bit of singing and a lot of good fun stuff, especially towards the beginning of the play. We are at the beginning of the play, we're on a ship. We see the ship that Viola and Sebastian are sailing on capsize, and they're all sort of, everyone's in white sort of Mediterranean sailor gear. They're on the SS Unity, and we have a lot of dance and things run by this cabaret singer, the Gâteau Chocolat.
who at this time we don't know to be Feste just yet. Illyria becomes 1970 Scotland, and this does create one or two sartorial problems, shall we say, in places, but it's all extremely good fun, I think, and the people who've taken against it, as I said, is that, you know, partially it's the whole Emma Rice thing and wanting to be right about the Emma Rice thing in your judgment that, you know, Emma Rice was perhaps the wrong choice, but also, you know, wanting a more standard version. But this more light-hearted version of the play, I think, works extremely well. We've got some nice performances in here. Certainly the trio, the Maria, Andrea Gucic, and Sir Toby Belt's trio of Carly Borden, Mark Antolin, and Tony Jaya Wardner were, I thought, very good. And I kind of would have wanted them, you know, they would have been perfectly able to give the more melancholic side to this play as well. But as ever, they're a lot of fun, and it was nice to see, you know, one or two golf jokes since they're in Scotland, and we had Tony Jaya Wardner driving foam balls out into the audience, pretending to play golf. Nita Joy Uwaje as Viola is very believable, although a touch slight, perhaps. The only minor problem I had with this was the people playing Olivia and Orsino. Annette McLaughlin is a bit tall and large-featured in the face to really convince you that she is the local great-looking girl, and that would give me a few problems. And the major problem with Joshua Lacey that I had was he wore a mullet, and it's a very mullety mullet, and it's a horrible hairstyle, and it doesn't look good on him, and it's difficult believing that these are sort of the two most attractive people in Illyria, which they're supposed to be, and it did give me a slight problem, because everybody else is, you know, it's not that everybody else is beautiful, but these two are supposed to be the people we find among the most attractive, and you know, I'm not entirely sure. As I keep going back to the fun parts, I mean, the idea is that you cut out some of the things which usually where Feste turns up and sings a sad song and everyone gets a bit sad. But they do play everything for laughs, and some of the scenes where Feste suddenly turns up at Orsino's palace, it's not done. And also, in saying the fun, we don't have to rely quite so much on the punning, which can be rather tiresome in Shakespeare, which we get from, well, it's, as I said, it's from more from Fabian than Feste, so we don't get a lot of the jokes that they play with some of the language games that Feste uses. However, we do still get the prison scene, and Legato Chocolat takes part in that, but Rory in a nun's habit than a straight priest's habit. Again, this is the second time this year we've had a Malvolio played by a woman. This is not as subtle as Tamsin Gregg. It's playing it very much, although she's a woman, she's very much being a man. I think she has a moustache and, you know, she's always wearing men's clothes, whereas I think Tamsin Gregg played it as a woman. Kathy Owen was fine in this and, you know, a lot of fun. And this is the thing, you cannot say that the audience didn't have a good time when watching this. They had a very good time, and I think anyone who dislikes this has really got it kind of wrong. It's entertaining, it's fun, and that's not always something you can say about Twelfth Night. But in the end, you don't quite get the bitterness and the anger that there are in parts of this play, and I do quite like them, although, you know, she makes the right selection, she knows when to get the audience laughing, and overall I think it's a good production, but perhaps not a production that the Shakespeare purists would recognise. We're now going to talk about Working at the Southwark Playhouse. This is from a book by Studs Terkel and is a musical adapted by Stephen Schwartz and Nina Faso, with additional contributions from Gordon Greenberg. The songs are by Craig Carnella, Mickey Grant, Lin-Manuel Miranda, who he ed, Mary Rogers, Sue Birkenhead, Stephen Schwartz and James Taylor. So it's a lot of reaction to the work of Studs Terkel. Now, we've had a work based on Studs Terkel, we've reviewed a work based on Studs Terkel about 5 years ago, the Finborough mounted the Arthur Miller play The American Clock, which was based on Studs Terkel's, or at least in part on Studs Terkel's book Hard Times and Oral History of the Great Depression. So again, we are mining into Studs Terkel, who seems to be a fairly fascinating guy with this musical. Tell me more about this and what you thought about it, Gareth.
Well, I think Studs Terkel isn't really well known here. I mean, clearly he's iconic in America and his home country. And amongst other things, he is what I would call an oral historian. But he did all sorts of other stuff as well. But he's clearly an iconic figure there, but little known here. And, you know, just when you thought that London Road was probably the first verbatim musical, you find, well, this one, which started in 1975, was probably the first verbatim musical, because it is based on his interviews with working people about their jobs. And some of those are set to music. And as you said from that list, there are a lot of songwriters. There are six songwriters involved in writing the songs for the show. It was actually originally put on in 1975, so it's more than 40 years since it was first put on. But this European premiere is actually a revised version that was first seen only about 8 years ago, I think in 2009. And that incorporated new interviews, which the co-adapter Stephen Swartz had done. And it also incorporated two new songs, and the two new songs were from Lin-Manuel Miranda, who may well have not been that well known at the time, but of course now is the man behind Hamilton. So he's the sort of musicals man of the moment, really. And I enjoyed this very, very much indeed. I'd seen an amateur production, I think, although it's called the European Premier, but I think I saw an amateur production by the American High School Theatre, who always go to the Edinburgh Festival. And I remember thinking, well, it was okay, but this is way, way beyond okay, really. We've got six actors who tell the stories of some 26 people. In a very diverse range of occupations, really. Some are spoken, some are sung, some are both sung and spoken. And what they then do, which I think is absolutely inspired, is they then add six performers as a kind of chorus. And each of these six performers are making their professional debuts. So they're kind of starting their working lives. And it just added a lot of life and energy to the show. And I just loved that aspect of it. I mean, you mentioned some of the songwriters. In addition to Lin-Manuel Miranda, I mean, James Taylor, who is better known as a singer-songwriter than a musicals songwriter, has contributed songs. And then Stephen Schwartz himself, who, of course, has since this gone on to bigger and better things. Well, bigger, I'm not sure about better, in my opinion, with things like Wicked. So they are, you know, songs are consistently very high quality. I mean, I really thought it was a very, very good selection of songs. And it's actually quite surprising, given it's virtually sung through, that you do learn quite a lot about these people, you know, from because these are their stories. They are very verbatim. It's quite refreshing in a musical to be hearing stories of ordinary people, you know, people who are sort of have ordinary jobs, and to hear about their motivations, their aspirations, because these aren't the sort of characters you get in musical theatre. So that's actually, I think, one of the most refreshing things about it here. And the presence of this young cast gave it a kind of strong sense of generations moving on and things moving from one generation to another. And there was a particularly moving song, which Peter Policarpu sings, called Fathers and Sons, which I thought really brought that over. He talks about, you know, his aspirations for his children. And I thought that was one of the most moving moments in the show, really. In addition to Peter Policarpu, we've got Gillian Bevan, Dean Chisnell, Kristen Cummings, Siobhan Harrison, and Lion Tam, I think his name is. And I thought they were all just great. There's a very, very good band, Up on High, as it often is in Southwark Playhouse, which is led by Isaac McCulloch. It's quite a shabby workplace design, and I think it works really, really well. Jean Chan, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, is responsible for the design. And then there's sort of appropriate distressed costumes, if you like, that kind of go with it, by Gabriella Slade. So, you know, a really high-quality production. You know, it's Luke Shepherd, who we've seen before. In fact, he did, I think, In the Heights, which was the Lin-Manuel Miranda show that started Southwark and went to King's Cross. And he's got choreography here, very, very good choreography, given that space by Fabienne Aloise. So I think they've done a great job of putting it all together, because I just thought it's only 90 minutes, but it was really captivating and also very uplifting. And I'm planning my next visit before it ends, because I thought it was excellent. And I kind of, because of this amateur production I'd seen, I kind of wasn't expecting it, so it kind of caught me by surprise in terms of the quality of not just the writing, but also the performing and the staging. So a strong recommendation for me.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com. The podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.